We are live from the Cadillac Club at Citi Field, the Mets and the Yankees, game two of the Subway Series. And joining us right now, a man who's seen all of them. That is the voice of the New York Mets on TV on SNY, the great Gary Cohen. Gary, great to see you. How you doing?
Well, Evan, it's good to see you. Good to see you shaving.
Yeah, I got the sense you didn't like the beard.
Well, you know, it was looking a little bedraggled by the end, so
it was a mess. But I did it out of loyalty for Pete Alonso. Mm. I really want the Mets to extend him, and I thought when
just listen how this story evolves.
Yeah, it started with me saying I'm not gonna cut my hair until they extend Pete, and then it turned into I'm not gonna cut my beard. And then he hires Scott Boras, and things get very ugly. And then the Mets aren't good, and my wife is upset. And I eventually shaved it, but the sentiment remains the same, Gary. And as a lifelong Met fan, but also as a broadcaster, they got to keep Pete Alonso.
When you said things were getting ugly, you were talking about yourself.
Myself, yes. And the team. The team wasn't playing well.
He didn't include that he's now taking credit
by the
shaving
way,
his beard.
Hi, Tiki. I noticed that.
How you doing?
I noticed that you didn't have to grow out your beard.
No, but I never would. I'm clean. I got to look right. I got to look like I belong in the Cadillac Club as opposed to scraggling around here like Evan does.
Do you think it's important? And, you know, it's kind of forgotten about now because the Mets are playing really well. We're in the middle of a season. Do you think as a lifelong guy with this franchise that it is important to keep him because of the connection he's developed with the fan base?
I think it would be fantastic if they can find a way to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, the hard part is what are the numbers, right? Because the position, right-hand batting, first baseman only, is not one that has generally aged well. And you look at the contracts for guys like Pujols and Cabrera and guys like even Chris Davis,
right.
And you just it makes you wonder where the cutoff point should be. And you know that Boras's numbers are different from David Stearns's numbers, and I don't know. I mean, I hope they can find a way to make it work.
Right.
Pete's a big part of this franchise, and he's a big part of the gestalt of the Mets. And what he's represented since the day he arrived, or even before that, in the world of free agency, who knows?
I just wonder how you reconcile it with the fan when you start saying, "Yeah, the money just got a little too steep."
Well, if you reconcile it with the fans by signing Juan Soto instead, that probably would make the difference.
Are they mutually exclusive?
I don't know. I mean, I know that Steve Cohen has more money than every other owner, mm-hmm. right? Now, how much of that he wants to spend and commit to over the course of the next 5 to 10 to 12 years, that's up to him. He gets to decide that. And David Stearns gets to decide whether it's efficacious for the franchise.
Efficacious. Do you know what that means, Tiki? Because I don't.
It's like how it makes you effectively work.
I got you. Part of why you're great is you're very smart. You use a lot of big words. And sometimes I look them up after you use them. And I say, wow, he used it perfectly. And it's really good. One of the things from this season that really rings in my head. See, you and Howie are the voices of the franchise as diehard fans and as broadcasters. And sometimes you say things and it's like, oh, my God, that represents us. It was like 5 games into the season. They were 0-5, and you made a comment, there's nobody in the building, they just blew a lead. I'm paraphrasing here. Wow. And then even later on during the Dodgers series, there were moments of, it can't get any worse. Sitting there, seeing so much Met baseball, did you think it could turn, especially the way it did?
Yeah, I thought it could. I thought going into the season that the trap door for this team was going to be starting pitching. And once Senga got hurt, and it looked like he was going to be out for a significant period of time, I didn't really think that they had enough starting pitching to keep afloat. And that's kind of been a delicate balance, right? The starting pitching's been okay, but they haven't gone deep into games, which has had an effect on the bullpen, and the bullpen's had its own issues because of Diaz's ineffectiveness and injury and now suspension. So from that standpoint, I had my doubts. But as far as the lineup was concerned and the way they were underperforming, I always thought that this team could hit.
Right.
Did I know that Mark Vientos was going to go off the way he has? No, but I knew that Francisco Lindor wasn't a 190 hitter.
Of course.
And Brandon Nimmo and J.D. Martinez would eventually, you know, find his footing and become the player that he is. And, you know, they get Alvarez back. And, you know, so you knew that this lineup had potential. And you know, I think we're seeing the top end right now. And I think in baseball, what you learn over the course of watching it for year after year is that you don't believe the bottom end and you don't believe the top end.
Amen.
And 5 games into the season when they were 0-5 and they're getting no hit in the sixth game.
That was it, right?
With nobody in the stands. That's as bad as it gets.
Yeah.
And you know it's going to get better. You don't know how much better, and that's why you play.
Yeah, it kind of felt like a self-fulfilling prophecy. They didn't do much in the offseason. They're going to stink. And guess what? They proved it for the first week or so of the season. But then it got better.
But they won that game.
Right?
They turned. They won that game, and then it was rock bottom. They got better after that.
Right. So I think the question around Mendy is he's managed this, I think, exceptionally well. Given the circumstances, they're now a game under 500, and you know, with the sweep of the Yankees in the Subway Series, they can get to 500. The job that he's done with the bullpen in particular, because you mentioned the starting pitching, but the bullpen, they had to manage it without Edwin Diaz. Now they have to manage it again. Give me your interpretation of his job so far this year.
I think he is extraordinary for a guy who's a first-time big league manager, and you know, he had minor league managing experience, and more importantly, he had winter ball managing experience, which is probably the hardest thing there is to do with players coming and going the way they do. But he's such a human being. He is so good at communicating with everybody. That means his players, it means the front office, it means the media. He just gets it, and he doesn't take a lot of stuff. He makes sure that players understand what's expected of them, and they haven't always been happy because not everybody wants to be. I mean, Adam Ottavino was not happy to be taken out of that game.
We
last
saw that
night,
clip last night
after three batters. Yeah. But there's such a respect, I think, at the end of the day, because he's coming from a place of trying to win, and I think that the culture is changing with this team, and I think that. You know, the team meeting that they had at the end of May, which was initiated by the players, but I think that if they hadn't called it, Mendy would have, and I think they knew that, and that something had to change as far as accountability. And I think that was a turning point for this team, and whether it becomes a turning point for the franchise remains to be seen. But between David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza, I think that they have started to change the culture, and hopefully we see the effects of that in the coming days and years.
It feels as if, besides his hitting, that J.D. Martinez has also added a leadership to that room that has really made a difference.
Well, it took him a while, right? Because he came in late, and then he got hurt when he was trying to ramp up. So he didn't arrive till late, and when he arrived, he wasn't really fully J.D. Martinez. So, you know, it took him a few weeks into the middle of May, late May, before he felt comfortable enough to start communicating what he knows. And, you know, I'm not a hitting guru by any means, but the way that he talks about hitting and the way his teammates talk about him talking about hitting is next level. And he has helped. There's no question he's helped Mark Vientos. He's helped Pete Alonso. He's helped Brandon Nimmo. He has been a force for good in that clubhouse.
I was going to ask, why didn't you talk about Vientos? Why didn't we see this coming?
I think he's just gotten better.
Yeah.
I think that what we saw from Mark Vientos in a brief period 2 years ago and a little more last year, and it was in short spurts because he didn't get a lot of rope, was that he was not as disciplined a hitter as he is now.
Right.
The power was always there. You always knew that if he contacted the ball, this ball went a long way. Ronnie made the comparison last night, and it's only a little bit out there watching him wear number 27. He said he looks like Stanton. Hmm. And it's not that far off. They're kind of built the same way. And the way he's able to drive the ball to all fields has been remarkable. But in talking to him, he said his biggest goal in the offseason was to learn better discipline, how to better identify pitches, identify location, not chase as much. And the results have been palpable.
We're talking to Gary Cohen. Mets take on the Yankees tonight. Game you can see on SNY. A game we did not see on SNY, and I missed you guys more than ever, was Sunday night. I missed you guys. I know you weren't in Chicago, but I assume if you got the full series, maybe you're there. And it's Gary and Keith specifically. I love Ronnie, but here's what I cared about. I wanted to hear Keith lose his mind over the ninth inning and the fact it took 45 minutes. The fact that guy gets ejected, guy takes 20 minutes to warm up, guy's hurt. Oh, wait, now he's not hurt. Now he's coming out of the game. I think his reaction would have been amazing. But I also wanted to hear you with this Edwin Diaz thing. What was your reaction to everything that went down? We've only seen a few guys thrown out. It seems like they're all Mets, and obviously the effect that it has on the team. But what was your reaction to the way this sticky stuff has played out and the way it affected Edwin on Sunday night?
Well, you know, we've seen it three times now. We saw it with Scherzer in Los Angeles early last year. We saw it with Drew Smith, and now we've seen it with Diaz. And honestly, I have to take the umpires on faith, right? I mean, they have inspected thousands of hands, and they have been taught this is what is sticky, this is what is tacky, this is what is okay.
What's the difference, by the way?
You know, it's a matter of degree, right? Sticky means stick. Tacky means tack. And the guys with tacky hands are allowed to wash their hands, and the guys with sticky hands get thrown out of the game.
Right.
I think ultimately it's on the pitcher. I mean, there's no other way around that. The penalty is so steep. Not so much for a starting pitcher, because you can kind of work your way around a 10-game suspension with a starting pitcher. But for a relief pitcher, in the way the game is played now, to go short a reliever for 10 games...
It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And I think that it should give everybody who applies rosin or sweat or whatever else they're putting on their hand, should give them pause and make them think about the impact it would have on their team if they go overboard.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like there's going to be any clarification. I want to go back to Adam Ottavino. We saw him, we talked about this earlier, mouthing something. We won't repeat it, but it was pretty offensive. Was they directing that at somebody?
I want to take the most charitable view of it and feel as though he was chastising himself. That I would think that that was the case. Until proven otherwise, and if it wasn't, if it was
directed, he asked about it yesterday?
If it was directed at anybody else, then I'm sure there have been conversations behind the scenes.
We've got a few weeks before this heats up, but that's the trade deadline. And I think the trade deadline is going to be fascinating because there are very few teams that are out of it. We only have two in the National League. How do you think this team is going to approach the few weeks leading up to the trade deadline?
I think it all depends. I mean, we've got so much time. I mean, people started talking about the trade deadline 3 weeks ago.
That was,
It's ridiculous. It's not till July 30th. It's only June 26th. You've got 5 weeks to go. So much can happen between now and then. We've seen what's happened in the last 3 weeks. The Mets have gone from non-contenders to being a game and a half out of the wild card, and they're a completely different team now, or at least it would appear. And it could change again or get incrementally better over the next 5 weeks. So I think you have to see where you are a week out. There's no reason the Mets can't thread the needle, right? They have assets, particularly for their starting rotation. Christian Scott's going to be back probably during this next stretch with the Mets maneuvering to fill that bullpen spot. They'll probably end up optioning a starting pitcher, bringing up Scott sometime in that next road trip in Washington or Pittsburgh. Would they move a Severino if they could get pieces for him? Maybe. But if they envision themselves as a deep postseason team, no, they won't. And I think it all depends.
Yeah.
I think there's so many factors that can change between now and July 30th.
I don't know if you have any conversation with David Stearns or see him or get an indication of where his mindset is, but he came into the season, and the indication was that I'm evaluating. I just want to see what this team is, what the construct is, what impact Mindy has, what value Pete Alonso, et cetera, these pending free agents have. Where do you think he is now with that? Because that's going to determine what, the Evans question, what's going to happen at the deadline.
Tiki, I know exactly what David would say. He would say, we're watching every day, and things change from day to day.
Right.
One injury, and all of a sudden, the equation changes, right? Francisco Lindor gets hurt tomorrow. How does that change what you do? I think that baseball is such a long season, and there are so many twists and turns. I think all you can do is sit there, watch what's happening, and when push comes to shove on July 20th and July 25th and July 28th, you'll have a better idea. And, think about 2015. I mean, it wasn't until the last possible moments that the Mets made the big moves.
Right.
First it was Uribe and Johnson, and then it was Cespedes, and then it was Tyler Clippard, and all those pieces brought together made them from and also ran into a championship team. So you just don't know at this point.
So I've been meaning to ask you this for years because I've heard you forever. And there was a time in which you were a Jets season ticket holder. I remember you talking about that. Yep. And then recently you made a comment to Steve Gelb, probably busting his, you know, what's about something. And you're like, I don't watch football. And I'm like, well, hold on a second. What happened? You went from a season ticket holder to not watching football?
He was a Jets season ticket holder. That's what happened.
Wow. I was a Jets season ticket holder going back to Shea. Wow. And through Giant Stadium and into MetLife. And I just soured on the game. First of all, the fan experience, going from Giant Stadium to MetLife, awful. Amen. I mean, I loved Giant Stadium.
Yes,
I sat in the upper deck at Shea, at Giant Stadium, at MetLife. Mm-hmm. Always sat in the upper deck. Always had the same people around us, mm-hmm. year after year. We went to MetLife. Everybody was split up. Mm. The concourses are terrible. The elevators are horrible. There are more fights in the stands than there have ever been before. And at some point, I just got tired of going. And then the game, you know how much I dislike replay in baseball. I dislike it 1,000 times more in football. It has, to me, it has ruined the experience of watching a game. And that combined with all the CTE news, I fell out of love with it.
Wow,
and,
interesting.
I mean, I was as big a Jets fan as there ever was.
That's what surprised me when I heard you say that.
Right. If they win, will it bring you back?
No.
You're gone.
Will you be at least a little bit excited?
I'm done.
Done.
Did you go from I watch every game to none? Was it like instant or was it like slow?
I went from watching every game and going to every home game to watching on TV to nothing.
Just paying. You even pay attention?
Only because I get it by osmosis.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, I could tell you don't, because even during, like, when you're promoting an update, you're like, yeah, what happened with the Jets? And I always felt like it jumped in my head. My dad brought it up to me recently, and it, like, I said, I got to ask him this, because I do remember.
Right. Yeah. It's not really an indictment on the Jets. It's an indictment on the game.
Oh, no, it's football.
Nothing to do with the Jets.
Right.
I mean, whether
MetLife is sterile.
Yeah.
Right? It's concrete inside. It's impersonal.
It's worse than sterile. It's hostile. Yeah.
I agree with so much of what you said. Do you ever think that could
Although
happen?
Although I did go to MetLife to see the Stones a couple of weeks ago, and that was fantastic.
There you go.
I had good seats.
Do you think that could ever happen to baseball? Because so much has changed over the last couple of years. Howie Rose was on the other day, and he suggested, and this made me sick, and I'm sure it makes you sick, he thinks in a couple of years they're going to get rid of the leagues. Yeah. 8 teams are going to make the playoffs. Can you see that happening to you and baseball down the road?
You know, here's it's kind of the opposite for me, because a few years ago when the game the pace of the game had gotten out of hand, I was finding it really difficult. Not from a fan standpoint, but from a broadcasting standpoint.
Sure, yeah.
There was so much dead time in the game, and for us as broadcasters, particularly on TV, it's not less so on radio. But on TV, you're just trying to create something out of nothing, right? Because there's nothing happening on the field. To me, the pitch clock was an absolute godsend.
I'm with you,
and the last year and a half, I have been more happy with the game than I have been in a long time.
Yeah, four hours of work is hard.
Well, it's not,
we do it every day.
It's not just,
you know, we have fun.
It is kind of what you do, but it's not what I do. And by shaving 30 minutes off the game, you've shaved 30 minutes every day of having to come up with stuff out of thin air that's related to the game but not of the game. And it was getting hard. And it's definitely much more fun now.
So I'm not trying to get in trouble with SNY. I love you, SNY. I think Gary Cohn is the greatest radio play-by-play voice I've ever heard. I don't know if you know this. He did radio at the Fan for many years. Pound for pound, I don't think anyone's ever described the game more accurately than you. Do you ever miss it?
I miss it all the time. Evan, I've been doing TV now. I did radio for the Mets for 17 years, and I'm now in my 19th year doing TV.
Wow, you passed it. Wow.
You don't look old. Like, you've been doing it 36 years.
I still think in radio and translate into TV. I probably do more description on TV than most TV guys, and I started doing it even more after the pandemic because doing the games remotely, which is the hardest thing to do. I mean, I did basketball remotely. That's easy as long as you have a big enough screen. But baseball is not a linear game. And what I found was trying to call the game on TV is that, especially when the ball is hit hard to the corners,
that the TV viewer doesn't really see what happens.
No, you're right.
It's hard for the director to switch fast enough. So I found myself after that doing a little more describing. But I try not to over-talk, and that's the translating from radio into TV part. But, yeah, I miss radio all the time. And that's why I still do the Seton Hall games, so I get to do radio.
When you – I think you got about 12 years left in you, maybe 15. Is that fair to say? Maybe 20?
I am not committing to that many. My wife would kill me if I did.
When you retire – one game on the radio. You got to give us one last return. Can you do that? Can SNY approve that?
I would do three innings on the radio every day if they'd find a way to do it. I mean, you know how they used to flip.
Yeah.
I would love if Howie and I flipped for the middle.
Right. You know what? That's a pretty good idea.
Actually, it's a great
idea.
It's
running up the pen pole.
You guys, are the booths close to each other? They have to be, right?
Not as close.
I mean, in football, the radio booth is kind of right next to the way
City Field was designed. Yeah. It was not really conducive to booth hopping.
Yeah, I can see that. The Mets take game one of the Subway Series. Game two, if they should win, it's a sweep in of the Yankees in the early part of this, but also they're at 500. I mean, this is important for the Mets because it's continuing what has been a very good month.
With no question. And, you know, obviously it's the Subway Series. Everybody cares, and it takes on outsized importance. But, you know, when the Mets get done with the Yankees, they got the Astros coming in for the weekend. And the Astros have had a season exactly like the Mets.
Yes.
Yep. They were winning today, the last I saw. I don't know if they won their game.
Check.
But they would be at 500
right.
if they won. So you have two teams that are in similar circumstances meeting for the weekend. And, you know, it continues from there. The Mets they've got the Nationals and Pirates on the road after that, and then one more homestand before the All-Star break. There is no reason for this team to not keep going the way they've been going.
Yeah, so. The Astros won. They're 40-40. They are red hot. Yeah. Favorite Subway Series memory, Dave Malicki or something else?
Well, Dave Malicki will always be very, very high on the list because it was the first. Yeah. And we hadn't had a game between New York teams since 1956.
Right.
Before 1997. So that was huge. And just, I don't know if you were there that
I was
day?
There. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was 6-0.
I know.
All the Yankee
we
fans.
We took over.
All the Yankee fans left. And I think I said something like, the Mets have scrawled their names on the wall of Yankee Stadium.
I'll never forget that.
And it was magical. It was absolutely magical. But the Matt Franco game, that is. You know, and
pound for pound, one of the great baseball games you'll ever see. Right,
and all of Piazza's home runs against Clemens, and Clemens throwing the bat, and you know, I mean, there's so many.
Yes, indeed.
You know, there's some bad memories too.
That's what
he said.
Tiki is apparently friends with Roger Clemens.
I am,
and I've told him. Just give me 5 minutes with him. Not that I'm going to fight him, but I want to yell at him because it's ridiculous that he thought it was the ball. Give me a freaking
break.
That's
what he said. I'm just telling you what he said.
Why was he throwing the ball on the dugout? Why wouldn't he throw it to first base?
I know. This one still bothers me to this day. Gary, we appreciate it. Thank you,
great to see you guys.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks very much.
The great Gary appreciate Cohen. It. You can watch him on SNY tonight. The Mets and the Yankees, the finale of this two-game series. More coming up live from the Cadillac Club at Citi Field. Evan and Tiki here on The Fan as we take it right up until the pregame show.